Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions. Welcome to the URN Radio Show. I'm the Paranormal Outlaw, the Mouth from the South, and joining me, as always, is dirty-ass Jeff Sterl.
Beautiful-ass Jeff Sterl. There is nothing on me that is dirty.
They wouldn't even let me.
That's right. I'm so clean, they wouldn't even let me in Walmart.
There's no way they wouldn't let
you in. Yeah, it is. They were like, oh, you don't fit our typical customer, so you are too clean for us.
They said you had to go out fast.
Because I'm too clean for them. I'm actually here. I'm down by Austin. Uh-huh. I'm at my friend Dwayne Johnson's house. Not the Rock Dwayne Johnson.
I'm the Pebble.
I said, he's the Pebble.
Oh. But you couldn't stop by and see me when you were in Dangerfield.
I tried to stop by and see you, and you were like, no, oh, I got a date tonight, and no, you got to work.
Well, you drop it on me in the last second.
Whenever I'm around, you're supposed to drop everything.
Oh.
You know the. That's right.
Well, hopefully everybody had a wonderful 4th of July weekend. Did you have a good 4th?
My dad made some ribs, so yeah.
Well, he probably had to cook a whole cow for you, Dee.
No, I really can't eat that much anymore.
No.
No, I don't know. I've been having some kind of stomach issues for the last few months. So I'm going to go to the doctor in a couple of weeks and see what the hell that's all about.
Well, he might actually tell you you're completely full of shit and you need drains.
I knew you were going to say that.
You know me all too well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lost my cell phone last weekend, so.
Good.
I had to deal with that and get a new phone. And, I got the iPhone 5S.
Cool.
And it came with a free tablet.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Are you going to give that to me?
No.
You're not going to give me that tablet?
No. Why would I give you the tablet?
Because you're clearly not going to give me the tour bus I deserve. So you can at least give me a tablet.
Yeah, well, it's not in your contract.
And the contract or not, it's what's deserved and what is owed.
Have Dwayne give you a tablet.
What do you say?
I got a writing tablet in there. Spiral.
No. No, we're not doing that. You can't get Wi-Fi on the legal tablets. Yeah, the college rule.
I know this for folks that are listening that are not in the wonderful state of Texas. It is hot as hell down here in Texas right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
hey,
as has been for the last week.
Quick housekeeping procedures. We have a sponsor to play right quick. Outlaw, you want to introduce this sponsor's ad?
Yes, it's NOLA Ghost Tours down in New Orleans. If you're down in the New Orleans area, hit them up and go on a great tour. They actually let you use paranormal equipment and actually go on investigation. You're not just doing a little walking tour with someone giving you ghost stories. This is more of a hands-on type thing. Chris had said that recently their ghost tour has been ranked in the top 5 in the whole city of New Orleans for attractions. So that's great for them. So they're doing great down there, and they're one of our sponsors. Jeff,
cool.
If you would play it for me.
Here we go.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the location and you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
All right. That's
cool.
Go check that out if you're down in the New Orleans area. Of course, anything down in New Orleans is pretty cool. They got a lot of history going on there, so check them out. Just a wee bit of politics here, just for a second, because I haven't been able to ask Jeff this. Jeff, did you see when our wonderful president coming down to Texas to visit with Dick Perry?
I did see that.
You know, the one time that I actually, in the history of Governor Dick Perry's, we know his name's Rick Perry, but us in Texas, we actually call him Dick Perry.
Well, those of us who are intelligent calling Dick Perry because that's what he is.
Yeah, but this is the one time that I actually liked him was the interview I saw on Hannity on Fox News. They did a post interview with the governor about what he talked about with President Obama, and what he actually said was I laughed my ass off, actually.
I can do that whole speech that he did and actually come across with the exact same points that he did. Are you ready?
What?
This is Dick Perry's post, Obama thing speech on Sean Hannity. Here's how it went. Borders, Texas, no money.
But hey, I actually was proud of him because he actually spoke the truth about the president, saying that, the man, he said all he did was talk. Governor tried to interject when he could, but Obama likes to hear himself talk. That's what he's good at.
If I was in a meeting with Dick Perry, I'd have to interject every time Dick Perry tried to talk to
me. No. Don't downplay Dick Perry, because he actually did not agree with what Obama's doing. He goes, why did
anything Obama does? Dick
okay,
Perry,
hold on now.
Because he's a Democrat. If
okay,
Obama,
hang on.
Dick Perry would be like, burr, 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 yeah, but he's great.
No. I'm trying to make a point here. I know that you're not a fan of Dick Perry, but I'm trying to interject the fact that the one time I actually liked what Dick Perry said, because the fact is he talks shit about Obama, because it's the truth. He goes, the man comes down here to my state and will not go to the borders and see what the hell's going on. Rather, he would go, after the interview, he goes and plays pool and goes to some Democratic fundraiser. Then he flies down to Austin to a lawyer's house to a barbecue that's $10,000 a head. And like Dick Perry said, he goes, how fast is Air Force One? You know, you're only about 300 miles from the border when you're in Austin. I'm pretty sure you can get Air Force One down to the borders pretty quick. But the man won't go down there.
Well,
you know?
He wasn't in Texas to go to the borders. He was in Texas for a fundraiser.
Oh, yeah, I know. And he decided to, because Rick Perry did not even really want to meet with him, because he knows he's full of shit.
Well, here's the thing, talk about the borders. Dick Perry claims that Texas is so rich now. Well, if that's true, why doesn't he secure the borders? He has that authority, but he's not doing so. He wants to blame it on somebody else.
Yeah. I'm not worrying about Mr. Governor, because he's on his way out. I'm more concerned about our. I'm more concerned about our idiotic president that seems to do more fundraising for the Democratic Party than actually taking care of the country. That's my point.
Well, find me a president that didn't do that for his party, and then I'll be impressed.
Yeah. Well, that's enough of our politics, because we could go on for 2 hours of arguing over this.
Little Bush
did the
same damn thing.
I know,
and so,
but I got to get some, because our guest will be calling in here shortly. Our guest tonight is Elaine Crosby. She's a psychic medium and paranormal investigator and author. Elaine helps out with missing person cases as well. Her first book, Investigative Medium, The Awakening, chronicles her journey to accept her gifts and explain her foundation and view of our world and the paranormal world. And then she has a second book that will be coming out, The Adventures of a Free-Range Investigative Medium. So that's going to be our guest tonight. I actually have her book, The Investigative Medium, The Awakening. I've only...
You haven't read it. Just admit it.
No, I was reading. You sent me a text, like you always do during the show.
Oh, well,
interrupt me.
It's a personal text. You don't need to. In all honesty, you don't need to read it on the air.
Right. But anyway, I have her book. I haven't gotten to finish reading it yet. I'm about halfway through it. But I mean, it basically talks about. And we've interviewed a lot of people like this, Jeff, that they kind of know that they got something going on with themselves as far as centuries and whatnot, but it's not till later in life that they actually, later on, they get in tune with it and actually accept it and use it for the greater good. And this is another one of those that kind of developed over the years.
That's exactly how it went down when I realized that I am indeed the paranormal sex symbol.
See, you claiming to be the paranormal sex symbol is almost like talking politics or religion. Yeah, it's just an argument. There's no proof.
You can't handle the truth. We need to get one of those on here. We need to get that quote on here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think we have our guest on the air now.
Well, right.
I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. This is Lane.
I'm Kevin, and Jeff is also with us.
Hello.
Hi. Well, this is Lane Crosby, and I'm happy to be on the air with you. Thank you for having me tonight.
Cool.
No problem. I believe you're in. Are you in Maryland? If I'm right.
I am. We're up in. Between really Rockville and Gaithersburg, it's north of Bethesda, northern Bethesda, and we are about to have the worst storm of the century. Our lights have been off twice, so if it goes off, I'll try to see if my cell will connect, because I'm calling you through my landline, which goes through cable. So, anyway, if you hear lots of thunder in the background, we're not having a fight, throwing things. It's just outside.
Right. Yeah. Well, at least you're getting some rain. We're getting nothing but lots of heat down here in Texas.
Oh, wow. Well, it's been really hot. We can't get our house air conditioned above 81. It's so hot. And we have it set on 60, so I think it's probably in the mid-90s. Of course, I'm from Atlanta, so... that's not that big of a deal.
Right.
You know, but you acclimate to it when you have 5 feet of snow all winter and you're kind of used to colder weather.
I love 5 feet of snow all winter.
You would think that till you have to shovel it.
Well, I wouldn't shovel it. I just call Outlaw and tell him to come up here and do it. Don't shovel it. Are you crazy?
Well, for our listeners out there, give them a little bit of background on you, and you know how you got into the paranormal, and I know you have medium gifts, and when you started noticing them and so forth.
Well, were you able to read my book? Finish my book.
I got about halfway to three quarters done. So yes, I've read quite a few chapters. Yeah.
So you stopped at the love story.
Yes, I haven't gotten through the love story yet.
Well, it's a good love story. It was channeled directly from one of the slaves here on the plantation where I live. I wrote a book about my adventures, more of what actually happened to me and how I became a psychic. I was just really working in corporate America in Atlanta, and I was in marketing, and I loved my life, was very happy. My husband got this great job up here in Rockville, and so within a very short amount of time, we moved. And we went through a lot of stress in moving and finding a place to live, bringing our young children who were 3 years old at the time. And we finally, once we got up here, we lived in a house in Alexandria and then moved into our house where we are now about 6 months later. We live on an old plantation, which is now Rock Creek, part of Rock Creek Park. And the plantation owner's house, the mansion, is where the archaeologist and the county historian reside. I live in a house on their property, on their old property, and we back up to the golf course, which was part of their farm where they grew things and then later became a dairy farm when the Beals owned it, and now it's a golf course. So when we moved in here, I noticed things started to feel a little different after the first few weeks, and I told my husband, and his parents had just come into town, and he said, you know, if you don't want my parents to come, you just say so. So I didn't mention it again. He gets creeped out by those things. So I I noticed more and more things started to happen, and I kind of kept quiet about it. And then one day I hurt my back. I was picking up a crock pot. It was one of the last things I had to unpack, and my back went out. I felt, oh, my gosh, you know, I feel like I'm this old person. So I was found by my husband, who came home for lunch, and he put me into bed and left for work again. He just works right down. He worked at the time right down the street. So I went to bed and took a nap. And when I was waking up, I heard this voice. And you know how you hear voices in your dreams? Do you all do that?
Yes.
Hear things, hear your dreams? Yeah.
Yep.
Well, this one voice was louder than all the voices I was hearing in my dream, and it started to wake me up. And the more I listened, the more awakened I became. And I heard her say, I have a son about the same age as yours. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. That's my son, not your son. Because I was really confused in this dreamlike state. And she said very calmly, very quietly, I know he's your son. And at that time, I really felt her presence. And I started to wake up, and I said, I knew I was losing her. I was losing that contact because I was becoming more awake. And I said, what is your name? And at this point, I opened my eyes, and I saw her standing there, and she said, Jeanette. And she had creamy, dark skin, light black, and beautiful cheekbones with an almond-shaped face. And she was wearing a dress, like a working dress with an apron on it. And then she just disappeared. It was like glitter or something, you know, just fell to the floor. And whoa, you know, I was just amazed. It's like I made contact. And it didn't feel bad. It wasn't really scary, but I was kind of miffed by it. So when Chris came home that afternoon, I said, you know, look, I want you to try something. I told him the story. He didn't appreciate it very much, but he humored me and said, okay, you know, I'll sit down with you. And I said, I want you to try to see if you can hear her too. So he did, and we waited a few minutes, and he didn't hear anything. And suddenly I heard, I touch his hair at night. He reminds me of the man I once loved. And I said, Chris, she plays with your hair at night. You remind her of her lover. Well, this didn't go over too well. Yay. He didn't come to bed that night. He didn't want anything more to do with it. He slept on the sofa somewhere. And so I went to bed. And the next morning I got up and the kids had gone. He'd taken them to preschool. And I started trying to find out where she lived, what happened to this property before. Because I think when people are spooked when they find something haunted, they automatically think, oh, something happened on this property, which is sometimes the case. Much of the time it's not. I mean, spirits can wander anywhere just like we can after we die. But I, you know, I did try to look up and find out what happened here. I couldn't really find anything. I had this big feeling I had to get in the car and drive. So I got in the car and I drove to the end of the driveway, and I didn't know which way to go. And we had just moved here just a few weeks before, and I had never taken a right. I'd always taken a left because that was how to get to the store and different things. And so I just felt this compulsion to take a right. So I took a right, and I drove that way. And I drove about half a mile, which is only three houses because there's a lot of land out here. And the next house right there, I looked, and there was this long driveway with this long row of loblolly trees that framed the drive. And there was this gorgeous manor home at the end of the drive. So I felt again this compulsion to take a right, and I drove down the drive. And I looked, and there was a parking lot beside the house. So I was intrigued. Oh, this is great. This is a place of business. So I can park here and not get in trouble, trespassing. So I parked, and I got out. And I started to walk up from the parking lot, and I saw a row of slave cabins behind the house. I think three of them. Mm-hmm. And I felt that presence again with me. And I said, is this where you lived? And she said, yes. So at this point, I was excited. I was nervous. I didn't know what was going on. I ran up to the stairs and started knocking on the door, and this man answered the door, and I told him, you know, I'd like to talk to you because there are people that are talking to me in my home, and I can't see them. And then I just thought, what is this place anyway? And he's thinking, I got this crazy woman standing on my front porch, probably. I wasn't quite sure what he was thinking. And I realized he probably thinks I'm crazy. So I stopped, tried to gather myself, and he said, how long have you been here? And I said, I just got here. He said, did you talk to that lady that's driving down the driveway? And I saw this Fox News van driving away. I hadn't seen her before, and I said, no, I haven't seen them before. And he said, well, they came to interview us for Halloween, for a Halloween segment, because our house here is very haunted.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh. So he said, well, come on in and let me go get the archaeologist, and she can talk to you more about it. So he goes up this, it's a gorgeous house, you know, goes up the stairway a couple flights. And he goes and gets her, and I'm looking around in the lobby, waiting, and I hear this clock strike, 1 o'clock. So I turned around to see this old grandfather clock, which I always love old clocks, and next to it was a picture of the family that had lived there during the Civil War. And I looked closer, and I saw my husband's face staring back at me.
Wow.
My husband looked just like the owner of the plantation.
Huh.
As I lived here longer and talked to Jeanette more, I found out that she was the nanny to all his 10 children. And
yeah.
There, she told me all about the love triangle that I wrote about in the book. She told
mm-hmm.
me how she loved William Robertson, who owned the home and the plantation. It'd come down to his family, and there are 1,000 acres there that are now part of Rock Creek. And that's how it all started for me. It all started with contact from the other side. I don't
mm-hmm.
think I would have ever known about my abilities, and it wasn't easy either. I didn't want them. I wanted them to go away, and they just got stronger and stronger, and I had to learn to accept it and surrender to it.
And how old were you when this event happened?
Well, I'm telling my age here. I was really about 39.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we've talked with a lot of different people that have abilities, and a lot of them develop later in their life. You know, their 30s, their 40s. So I find that fascinating that a lot of people, you know, they're so in tune with their lives and focused on what they're doing, you know, in their lives that they really have shut off everything, and then one day it just starts opening up, you know?
You know, you're right, and I have a lot of women who, men too, but women are, I think, more open with me at first,
mm-hmm.
and they want to find solutions for this, you know, or what's going on, how do I make sense of it, how do I deal with it, and
mm-hmm.
it comes with middle age, you know, and I don't know if 40 is even middle age anymore. I wonder if it's just the time in your life where you just don't care what people think anymore, you know?
Yeah.
You just, you've been through all that. You've done a lot in your career, and you're just being you now, you know? And
right.
going through your experiences in life and figuring them out.
Yeah, because like myself, when I got into the paranormal, I was 35, 36 years old, and now I'm about to be 41. But the more I started doing the paranormal and getting involved in investigations and whatnot, it seemed like my body and my mind got more in tune, and I'm not psychic anywhere near, you know, some people out there, but I notice how my body reacts to, you know, different energies that we come in contact with, you know, and I can discern good energy from bad energy now, and I never used to be able to do that, you know. I can tell when there's
right.
a presence in a room, And, here I am in the same age as just about everybody else. And I've noticed that either they're later in life when they get their ability, or they've had the ability, they just didn't turn it on, per se. The light switch came on one day. I've known people that were psychic, growing up as a child, and it just never shut off for them, and they've had to deal with it all their lives. And then other people, they didn't have any kind of experience, and then they had some kind of near-death experience or, some kind of tragedy health-wise in their life, and they survived it, and then now all of a sudden the light switch is on, and now they're just getting bombarded with spirits and whatnot, talking to them and seeing them and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting how our body and our mind just, we say it all the time on the show that my belief is that, and Jeff is too, because Jeff's more in tune now too, that everybody has some sort of psychic ability, and it's just, it has to deal with a lot of how you're brought up, how in your family, if you're open or closed or whatnot, you can develop them. You can one day just learn how to open it up or something happen, and, your abilities start shining. Then the fun part comes is how to control it, because everybody I've talked to, they have different ways of controlling their abilities, how to shut it off, per se, so it's not running their life all the time.
right. No, so, you're right.
Oh, it's, yeah. I ask a lot of the, people that come on the show, I say, so do you, are you able to shut it off? And they're like, yeah, because if I didn't shut it off, I wouldn't be able to be a mom or a father, or, do my job and all that, because I'd have spirits talking to me all the time.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I mean, you can't shut off what you dream about, really.
No.
And because I feel so much, I can't always shut off that. I mean, if a spirit comes around me that's sad, and I all of a sudden will get sad because I'm very, very physically empathic, that's one thing that I have to consciously ask for angels to come around me and circle myself with white light so I don't. Or if somebody wants to get my attention, I will feel them touching me, and then, because I'm not. I mean, I live in this world. I've got kids, a loud dog. I've got, a right. So, yeah, you do what you can. But I know what you mean, and I was talking to some people about that this weekend, that there's some people that have been coming to some of my psychic development classes for a long time, and they said that they were bricks. And I had one guy who was an engineer who comes with his wife, and she became a medium. She really started opening up a couple of years ago, and she does very well now. And her husband is an engineer, and this is the first time I've seen him really start to get a lot of things. And I think it's almost like running a race when you start to train. Maybe you're starting to train for a 10K, and the first time it just kills you, and you can only get a few miles, and then you think you're going to die. And then eventually, after a few months of training, then it's easy to run a 10K, because you get used to it. You sort of work up to it. And we just keep doing it, and our body responds to that. Just like when we keep, doing this spirit work, our body responds to that, and the energy sort of we sort of acclimate to it and get better and better.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because there's been times I've made myself. I was talking to one lady I had on the show on Facebook after the show, and she was thanking me and whatnot, and the color red kept popping in my head, and I said, hey, good question for you. Are you wearing a red dress? And she goes, how in the hell do you know that? I don't know. It just popped in my head, and I here in the last few years, I've noticed that every now and then. I'll be at work, and I'll pick the guys out and say, okay, there's going to be three guys come in that front door of our work all at the same time. One's going to have to the truck, and then it'll happen, and they'll be like, what? And I can't do that all the time, you know, I guess because I'm, I don't know, I'm kind of OCD, so I can't really focus. I can't focus all the time. I'm all over the place, and sometimes it does, you know, I get in tune, I can do some of that stuff. It's on rare occasions, but if you do more training and train your mind and your body, you probably could, it could probably come a lot easier for you.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think so. So you've been doing this about 6 years, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I sure have. Ed?
What all, where all do you investigate?
What have we not investigated? Here in the last year, though, we've kind of, it's actually been, what, Jeff, since Christmas time that we went out and did something?
Something like that.
Yeah. Me and my team, you know, of course every team has it. We had some inner turmoil and half my team left to pursue their own team. And so the rest of us were kind of just burned out and fed up with all the BS, all that drama. So we just kind of took a sabbatical, you know. We've all kind of just, we get together every now and then and go on a little ghost hunt, but nothing extravagant, you know, any of that. When we were on hard, we'd have two or three investigations a month, and most of them were residentials. We went to a lot of historic places, but it's like there for a while we were the ones to call if you had some kind of malevolent type spirit in your home. You know, we didn't advertise that that's what we did or any of that. It's just like every time I got a phone call, it was something horrific on, you know, not only spiritually, but with the family orientation, you know, what was going on amongst the family. Their family was in turmoil as well. It affected us, you know, when you undertake malevolent type cases, and some of them were even, you know, demonic at some point, and we had to call in some help. But when you undertake those type of cases, it takes a toll on you and your personal life. And, you know, it took a toll on all of us. I know it took a toll on me way down. So it's been nice to kind of have a period of kind of getting, you know, a breath of fresh air and kind of relaxing and, you know, taking a break a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I hear a lot of organizations go through that. Too bad y'all are in Texas. Do you ever get out to Gettysburg?
I've been to Gettysburg probably three times. That was actually where I had my first paranormal experience as a kid. Because my family is originally from Ohio. I was from Ohio. You can't tell by my accent. I moved to Texas when I was seven. But all the roads are in Pennsylvania and Ohio, New Jersey. So every Sunday we take vacations. We go through and I've been in every battlefield. When I was 12 years old, I had my first. At the time, it was a paranormal experience. It was later on when I started getting into the paranormal that I looked back in my life and I said, wait a minute. And I talked to my dad. We were out at the main battlefield, you know, where the pickets charge is, and we were looking down the hill and we saw a regiment, a Confederate regiment off in the distance down by the woods marching. And my brother and me and my dad, all three of us saw it. So we had saw the park ranger, it was 4th of July weekend, which is coincidentally when the battle happened. And we asked the park ranger, like, so y'all going to have a reenactment today? And he's like, oh, no, we don't have any reenactments this holiday weekend. And that's when we all looked at each other like, what in the hell did we just see, you know? And it didn't dawn on me, being a 12-year-old boy, what it was. And then later on, I was like, holy crap, I just saw, like, a whole regiment of ghosts on the battlefield.
You know, that happens a lot at Gettysburg. Mark Nesbitt, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He is my business partner and a Gettysburg historian. And he hears lots of stories because he's written the Ghost of Gettysburg books. Oh, I think he's up to 8 now. And people are always telling me, you know, I just saw this regiment out there practicing. And he'd say, no, not today. So I was at Belgrove Plantation this weekend. I had a psychic development weekend, and those are always fun. Belgrove Plantation was James Madison's birthplace, and it's huge. It's gorgeous. It's from the early 1700s, and there are so many ghosts that the people who live there see them all the time, full body, like horses running across the field and then just disappearing as they run across the field, and soldiers and people who were of the colonial era. And there's always a new, a new picture or something new every time I go. That they had a full picture of a full body apparition this time. And then one of the people who stayed there last time, Friday night, got a picture. It looked like a skeleton above their bed. And it was the craziest thing. I'm going to have to download it and take a closer look. But that's the room that I usually stay in when I go. I know. I don't really like those kind of things because I never get any sleep. Whenever I go anywhere, people always, B&B owners always put me in the haunted room so I can tell them what's going on, And
right.
Then I don't get any sleep.
Well, we went to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. We drove 13 or 14 hours from Texas over to Tennessee, and we spent the whole weekend there and actually slept in the hospital, and it's highly haunted. And I got rest, but I didn't get a lot of rest, and it wasn't because of the spirits. It was because of Jeff and him moving around all night in his bed and making it squeak. And so the ghost left me alone. It's the fact that Jeff he couldn't sit still sleeping.
Jeff, what do you have to say? That really wasn't you, was it? That was a ghost, wasn't it?
No, that was me. I was, it was a blow up mattress, and it was one of, it had the rubber outside. Every time I kept turning over, it would go.
Oh no.
Yeah, Jeff and I go way back, all the way back to high school. We went to the same high school. So yeah, we've known each other quite a long time.
Well, Kevin graduated about 20 some odd years ago, and I graduated 2 years ago.
No, sir.
Yep.
That's not how it works.
That is how.
I graduated in 92, and you graduated in 93, so be quiet.
Not graduating.
I'm going to show my age. Yeah, so if I'm going to show my age, you're going to show yours, too.
Well, I'm only about 22.
Oh, man. So, what has been one of... Because being up in the northern states, everybody up there has more, there's more historical things that have gone on in the past than, say, down here in Texas. Down here in Texas, the only kind of battles that we had was down around San Antonio and those areas. So we come into historical places, a lot of times we come in contact with, Indians. Because, before Texas, obviously it was occupied by Indians. They occupied all the states a lot of the time, but you guys up there had a civil wars, and being such a tragic time period, it seems like there's a lot of spirits from that era up in a lot of those places you go to.
There really are. And, I grew up in Atlanta, in the city of Atlanta, and I never thought about it because I just was so used to it. I figured everybody had a historical marker in the front yard,
Right.
I thought they just put those there. But it was only later when I came back and found out that I was, on a in the battle. We live in Buckhead in Atlanta, and the Battle of Buckhead was right there. And I was so haunted growing up with so many things that happened in the house. And like I said, I never knew I was psychic. I thought that all these abilities, you know, they pretty much came on me in later life. Because I figure if I'm seeing a ghost or something's happened to me, it's happening to everybody.
Right.
But my mom was never with me whenever it happened. And I would tell her, and she'd say, oh, honey, you just have such a big imagination. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I just stopped telling her about it. And it wasn't until, you know, really when she died that all of this started to open up for me, and I started freely talking about it more because she didn't want me to talk about it. And well, here it's really different because everything is historic. Going back to, you know, Annapolis and the first settlers coming over and Jamestown,
uh-huh.
which isn't that far. And then we have so much. We've, you know, Roanoke isn't that far away, all the way up to, you know, the pirates at Annapolis and then the battles here. The Revolutionary War and the Civil War were fought here in my area, and some of the Civil War was actually on my property. So there's just a lot here, and because of that, I think people have more experiences here, and people don't really question me. It's not like, oh, you do what? It's more like, oh, wow, well, I have this story.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> And in the Bible Belt, it's really not that way, you know. It's kind of like, good for
no,
you here,
no.
Let's go.
No, yeah, we're in the, well, I am. Jeff's from this area. He lives more toward the Austin area now. But
that's Texas.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, but
love
in East Texas, yeah, in East Texas, it's more of a very, very, just about every street corner has a church. You're looked upon a little bit different around here. You know, if you say you're a paranormal investigator, a lot of people say, oh, you worship the devil, that's evil, they're going to hell, you know, that kind of crap. And so it's quite interesting when you go into somebody's home, you know, depending on what religious background they have. Some of them, you have to pull out the Bible and actually point out things to them to get their mind kind of open, you know. But,
right.
You know, and everybody's got, in the United States, everybody's got, depending on where they live, you know, depends on how much you're accepted. But I think here in the last several years, you know, with all the shows on television and the movies and whatnot, I think more and more people are open to it because even myself, you know, getting into the paranormal, a few years down the road, people would say, well, what's that shirt you have on? And I'll tell them, and they'll say, well, I'll tell you a story, you know?
Yeah. That's true. I've had a lot of stories here. I don't, you know, and it's almost like, once you live here, I think it's like we were talking about with the energy, you become acclimated to it. I think there's just so much around you that you start not only accepting it, but you know, being more open to figuring it out too. But there's just a lot. People say they go to Gettysburg and that they're just exhausted when they get there because so much happened there. There's so much energy. I've known mediums who go there and then they just spend 3 hours out during the day and then have to sleep for the whole next day. And it's draining. I mean, I used to have to do
yeah.
that too before I, you know, became used to my work. Very
yeah,
tiring.
We went, Jeff and I and my dad, last 4th of July weekend. Of course, we're only an hour from the Louisiana border, and so we just get on the interstate and get on I-20, and Vicksburg's only 3.5 hours from my house. So.
Oh, I want to go to Vicksburg so badly.
Yeah, we were like, let's go to Vicksburg. You know, a lot of people that don't realize distance are like, you're going all the way to Mississippi. I'm like, dude, it's not that far. Louisiana's not that wide of a state. So, you know, 3.5-hour drive, if we were going to drive the other way, we'd be in Fort Worth, you know. So it's not.
Right.
When you get distances.
Texas
so.
Texas is its own country.
So, we went to Vicksburg, and because I had never been to a Civil War battlefield since I became a paranormal investigator, a battlefield, a well-known one. And so we went there, you know, and we'd hop out of the vehicle, go on a little tour, you know, the car tour, and we'd hop out, and I'd run little EVP sessions and just enjoy the battlefield and kind of see if I can make contact with the spirits. Unfortunately, I still haven't gone through that entire EVP session yet. I'm lazy. But there's a lot of energy there, too. You could feel it in different areas. I don't know. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I felt a lot of energy when they did that cannon reenactment and they shot that cannon off.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, because, see, Vicksburg, if you ever get a chance to go down there, what they've done, because it's like a lot of the battlefields up on a hill, big old mountain, and like any other battlefield, they've let the trees grow, right? So back in the 1800s, that was open field. So what they've been doing and where we were at when they shot that cannon, they actually pour out all the tree. So we were on the Union side, and you could see the top of the hill where the Confederate line was. And before that was all in trees and you couldn't see it. And they've gone in there and they started clearing out the battlefield the way it looked in the 1800s. And it's really cool.
You know, they're doing that at Gettysburg. Well, I don't know if it's going to be the 150th there or if you've just passed it, but they've been doing that for several years and really changed a lot to make it just like it was during the 150th. I guess that's part of it being a national park. It's interesting to see because I've gone so many places and looked back into time and seen it was really kind of different. But Vicksburg is a place that I've always wanted to go to see, and I find it of particular interest because I am just an hour from Gettysburg, and I do spend a lot of time there and a lot of time with events that I have there because I work with Mark Nesbitt so much. But also because Vicksburg happened at the same time as Gettysburg.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, you had the division of the armies, you know. And Vicksburg was horrible, and it was bloody, and it was just terrible. There were some soldiers who, I go to the Keshtown Inn, which is a very, very haunted place in Gettysburg, and it was Lee's headquarters during day one. It's when they first approached Gettysburg, and I've talked to some of the men who knew Lee and were with Lee at the time, and they've said that they had planned to go to Harrisburg to take over the capital, but they didn't get there. They had orders, and they just didn't act on them soon enough, and some of them feel kind of guilty about that because they would have missed the whole battle. It would have been a turning point of the war, and the South would have won. I mean, I think this just goes to show that sometimes that things were meant to be the way they were, because I see how they just lagged because they were tired, and then the Union forces, it was a mistake. They weren't meant to fight at Gettysburg. They just happened to be there. And it's interesting because there was a great Indian battle there. Nobody really knows when it was. They see proof of the battle, but it could have been in the 1500s or the 1400s or, you know, even earlier than that, right there in Gettysburg, so really huge with tens of thousands of Native Americans, and both of these battles were at the same place. But at the Keshtown Inn, getting back to my story, there are just so many spirits there and so many that I've talked to, but one day I was there with my daughter, and we went upstairs because Jack Palladino, the owner, said, you know, would you just go upstairs to the Lee suite and see what's going on? And I said, okay, I will. So we walked up there, and I sat down, and I was talking to Annie, and there were, you know, some spirits there, and I was talking to some of the men as well. And Annie, my daughter, is a medium, and she was probably 11 at the time. And I said, well, you know, at the same time, to Annie, I was telling her the story about the Battle of Gettysburg, and Vicksburg was happening at the same time. And one of the men there said, what happened at Vicksburg? You know, I'm from Mississippi. I'm from that area, you know, and he was really worried. And he got so upset, he slammed the door. And, of course, he wanted me to answer him. And Annie was just terrified. She took off running down the stairs. And, you know, I always have to remember who's around me or be cognizant of that before I talk. But, you know, it was such an extreme. These men didn't know that it wasn't still 1863 at the time. But, you know, I've done some work in New Orleans. I was just down there a couple weeks ago, and I explored some there. And the Le Pavilion Hotel, which is, I think it's on International in Canal Street. Mm-hmm. I don't know how familiar you are with New Orleans, but I guess you're not that far, really.
No, about 5 hours or so, 5 to 6 hours.
Oh, okay. And, you know, I met a woman there who they said that they were haunted, and I went and talked to a woman there, and she had hung herself because her husband, I think it was her fiancé at the time, said he was going to meet her there and be married after the war, and he never showed up. And he had gone to Vicksburg to the battle, and then she just never heard from him again, and she was still waiting for him there. So it really goes to show this one war and how, you know, what extremes there are, not only physically, emotionally, but as far as geographically, you know, people feeling the same things at the same time across the miles.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting that there's so many Civil War era-type spirits that are still, you know, here interacting with our world, you know. And a lot of them, sad to say, are not aware, or really, they're still stuck in their time, right? They're still reliving what they were going, what they were doing when they were alive. And
true.
You know, and so just like you just pointed out, I guess what happened in Vicksburg. Well, you know, because
yeah,
he didn't know, and he still don't know where he's at now. You know, and so it's interesting about that one event has affected the spirit world. I talked to a friend of mine went over to Ireland and Scotland. He's a psychic, and he said he'd never been over there, as a, you know. And he said the spirits over there are just way, way more powerful. He said, you know, he's running the spirits that had been dead 300-400 years.
Where's this?
Scotland and Ireland.
Was there a specific place where he likes to go? But I'm sorry to interrupt. This is really interesting to me. I love that area.
Yeah, well, he visited. I don't know all the names of the different castles. They went to different castles, and he traces his family. They're actually Scottish, so the family. And, you know, the location of his family. And it was just rumors, and he talked to a relative, you know, that had 400 or 500 years, because, you know, we're in Europe, and that's more ancient to belong to the United States.
Right.
So he said the spirits he came in contact with over there were watched from their person. And some of them would just, and they weren't mean, you know, they were up in your face, you know, when they're talking, and their energy was so powerful. And he's just like, man, the spirits over there are totally different from the ones over here in America that he's come in contact with.
Well, yeah, I mean, my sister-in-law lives, well, she lived outside of London, Leicestershire, and now she lives in Scotland, and they lived in very haunted places, and the people there in the UK just are even more so embrace the paranormal, much more so than even here. And that may have something to do with the religion as well, being a Church of England or Catholic and not, you know, and not,
yeah,
you know, religiously different backgrounds. But she would tell me she'd just be driving down the road and see somebody there that she would be a ghost, and the lights would hit them, and then they'd fade away. And my husband's been like that. He can see spirits that I don't necessarily see but feel all his life, and it's sort of terrified him. And I can imagine seeing them and not being able to, you know, feel them and hear them and talk to them is kind of scary. But, you know, it's somewhere I really wanted to explore. I went to school there when I was younger for a while at the University of London and then at the University of Tours. And there are places that I went that, I mean, everything is so old there, but I can remember the feelings that were just creepy. And like the Tower of London, or this one restaurant that we would go to that was right next to the university, to our dorm room, and it was built in like 1480, and the floors were, you know, curved. I mean, if you put a marble on it, it would just fly, to, you know, back and forth to the other side, and it's, you know, and the beams were huge, and it just felt creepy there and cold in spots, and you know, I didn't know why at the time, and now I think back and go, wow, if I could just go back now with this ability, it would be so cool to find out or what's happening or what did happen, because there really is so much there. It's almost like I had a friend call me who was in Savannah last week, and I love Savannah and, you know, growing up in Georgia, and she said, I want you to tell me about the place where we are. And I said, well, you know, there's a man standing next to you, and you're in this room, and you know, it's just, it was just eerie because she said, well, who else is here? And I said, well, some have come and some have gone. And she says, why? Or, you know, did they die here? And I said, no. The afterlife is almost sometimes like this life. They just, they go to that house because the woman who lived there had a lot of parties and she was very welcoming. And so they still go there and she's still there and people come and go. It's not like they're trapped there. It's like they live a life almost like we do. They continue to, you know. And even spirits who crossed over come back sometimes and,
you know, and
visit and go.
It's tough sometimes to, with all my experiences in being an investigator and working with mediums and talking to spirits, you know, having a conversation through a medium with the spirit that's there, you know, it's hard for some people, depending on their religious background, to wrap their head around that because they're taught that when we die, you either go to heaven or hell, and that's it. You know, there's no in between, there's no nothing. You know, it's that cut and dry, right? And I try to explain to them that in our experiences, I said, we come across all different types of spirits. We've come across spirits that don't even know they're dead. We've come across spirits that we've come across, you know, our most heartbreaking, and Jeff will remember this. We're in Jefferson, Texas, which is a highly haunted town, Civil War town, in fact. And we come across this little boy in his home. We were doing a public investigation, taking groups around of these haunted locations, and we started talking to this boy, and he had been dead over 100 years, and he was 8 or 9 years old, and he told our psychic medium, he was having a conversation with him, and he said, you know, we asked why he was there, and he said he was waiting on his mom. Well, we know for a fact, if he's been dead for over 100 years, that his mom is over there, right? And he's kind of stuck
right
in between. He's in that house waiting on his mom. And we asked him, he said, well, do you see a light? And he goes, yes, but I'm scared to go to it. And we convinced him that his mom is in that light. And the most touching thing about it was our medium started laughing. I said, what? He goes, I just saw the funniest image. He said, I saw the boy walk to the light. He stuck his head into the light, so only he could only see half his body, right? The other half, right? Poked his head in the light and poked his head back out and looked at him and said, hey, you're right. Mom is over here. And he crossed to the light, and that was it. So we helped him cross over.
Okay.
So that was a really touching moment for us, you know, because we felt bad for the boy. He's sitting there waiting for his mother, and we just kind of convinced him, hey, go to the light and you'll be with your mom, you know. So it's hard for people that are not in the paranormal, especially clients, when you try to explain to them that they're different, all different forms. And us as investigators, and even, you know, you as a medium, we come across new things all the time. I mean, every time we do something involving the paranormal, we probably walk away with more questions than what we had answered.
You know? Yep.
It's an ever-evolving thing for us that are out there looking for knowledge about what's going on when we die. And it's more complicated than what everybody thinks it is. There's just so many variables depending on the spirit you're dealing with. And, you know, and I try to explain to people, you know, your loved ones, yes, they've crossed over, but they still can come, you know, and in tragic times, hard times, holidays, they're around you. They may not be making a door slam or any of that, but spiritually and energy-wise, they're there with their family at times of need. And, they're like, there's no way, they're in heaven. No, God gives them that right to still make, they still have free will when it comes, they live by a different set of rules, and we've had different spirits. And I tried to tell a lot of paranormal investigators, if they tried to gear their questions more towards why we're into the paranormal, they might come up with some more answers, because we started doing that. Instead of just asking the spirit, you know, if we're in a haunted location, per se, this is where we mostly do it, because when you're dealing with a client, you have to do the basic stuff, because you got to figure out what the heck is going on and what is the spirit there. But if you're in a location, especially if you have to pay to rent it out, and hundreds of teams have been there, well, you already know there are spirits there, obviously, so why not talk to them and say, hey, what is going on over there, you know? You live by a different set of rules over there. You know, what's your experiences over there? And some of them will spill the beans a little bit. But this leads me to my question to you. Have you ever conversation like that with a spirit, you know, they're talking about things over there? Like we talked to one spirit that said that they met a gentleman that had died twice, you know, had lived two different lives, died twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like when you have a conversation and they start talking about their side of the, you know, where they're at, it's like they keep talking and all of a sudden they stop talking, they leave. It's almost like the powers to be, angels, whoever it might be, pull on them, says, okay, you said where they start spilling the beans and then all of a sudden, boom, they stop talking.
I do. You know, if they've crossed over, I try to ask them sometimes. You know, a lot of times I'm there just to tell their family member what they want.
Right.
And it does take a lot of my energy, so not all the time. But, you know, I do with my mom and my dad, and I try to get EVP. But it's so much easier just to talk to them and not try to wait for them to get up the energy to give me EVP. But, you know, my dad said heaven is beautiful, and my mom said it's very different than she thought it would be. She said she can come and go. It takes energy to come
mm-hmm.
to here. And she said, I asked her if it was like there was like a portal, and she said, or a door. And she said, well, there's not really a way to explain it in the way that you would understand
right.
how it is. And I said, you know, people say it's a veil. Would that work? She goes, yeah, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like going through a veil. But it's so different than our earthly experience. There's not a way that she could figure out to, you know, really go into it. But I did ask, there's a man who is in heaven that keeps coming back. He buried something that he wants me to dig up. But he doesn't remember exactly where it is in this 100-square yard radius. But, you know. And I said, what is it like? And I said, what is it like in hell? What have you heard? And he said, well, it's like total darkness. He wasn't in hell, but he said he's heard people talk about it and said it's like total darkness, and you're just being chased and chased and chased, and you don't know where you're running. You're afraid to run forward because you're afraid you're going to run into something as bad as, you know, that's chasing you. But you just keep running and running. And I thought, wow, that's got to be probably the worst thing. That's worse than, that's fear. That's worse than being burned or any of these things. So.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jeff, that goes to our saying about when a ghost takes a run at you.
They know better than that.
That makes a lot of sense. Take a run.
They don't do that to me. They know better than to try to do that with me.
I had a girlfriend of 3 years that passed away, and
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and well, she died of a brain aneurysm. It was I was actually on the phone when it happened. It just hit her. And,
no, poor thing.
Yeah, and so like a week later, one of my friends that is a psychic medium, he came over here to pick something up. And we were just sitting here chatting, and he goes, and he never met her. So he didn't know what she looked like or anything. And he said a female presence walked in. I was like, oh, here we go, you know. And she had always ragged on my ass when I'd go on investigation. And I'd come back, she'd text me and say, did you find any ghosts? Ha, ha, ha. You know, that kind of stuff, giving me hell about
it.
And here she is in my house appearing as a spirit. You know? And she started spilling the beans a little bit, and she held up the Bible, and she said, you see this? This was written for man. This is written for you guys over on that side. Over here, God has another set of rules for us. This doesn't apply to us over there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we asked, have you met God and met Jesus, the archangels and whatnot? She goes, yes, but they have their own section over there. They're there, but they're kind of separate from everybody else, right? Which kind of makes sense, you know. They got a lot of responsibility. So, but yeah, she was giving us some insight, and then finally, she kind of had to stop. She's like, well, I got to go. Like somebody was telling her, okay, you told them enough. which, you know, being somebody that I'm close to, you know, just talking to your mom and dad, when they tell you stuff like that, you know, that really sets in because they're not going to lie to you, you know, and when they tell you about stuff over there. So I find those real fascinating. So that's what we try to do now when we talk to spirits is, We have general conversations, but if they're really a talkative spirit, then we'll go into these spiritual questions and see if they'll give us any insight on what's going on. And, you know, the most interesting thing that we found, I don't know if you've ever come across this with spirits, there's a house down here in Jefferson that's really haunted. It actually burned down, unfortunately, last year, I believe. Highly haunted, and people that would go there and investigate, they would come across this woman that was in this, like, I believe a purple dress, but she never said anything. But then we went to a house up in Arkansas, the Allen House, and it's highly haunted, and it was built around the same time as this other house, and we did some research. The families are from the were born and raised in the same state and then moved to different states. But the woman that was in the dress is actually a woman that is in the house in Arkansas and actually talked to it.
Oh, good.
And we found out that this family and the family in Texas, they go to each other's homes. So when paranormal investigators, they come across somebody that really doesn't belong there. And we asked them, we were like, you go down there? And they're like, yeah, we visit them. I'm like, are you kidding me? These spirits are going back and forth and visiting each other's houses.
You know, there's I have a friend who owns a farm in Gettysburg, and the David Stewart farm, and she has, when I went to investigate, I was the first medium that was ever there, and she wanted to see what was going on because they'd had, her family had had so many experiences over the 30 years that she'd owned the farm, and so I kept getting a Margaret. So finally I talked to Margaret, and Margaret's like the lady of the house. She was the first person to own that property with her husband in the 1700s. And she's still there, and she's the sweetest lady, and my daughter sees her, and she's always very welcoming when I go, and she will go with us where we go places. And we went over to another woman's house who was having ghostly issues that was not far from there, and I went in and started talking to her lady of the house. Well, her lady of the house found her way there, I guess. The house was from the 1800s, and this woman was from another area, another house, but she just liked this house, so she came and moved there with her family, her spirit family. And she seemed very nice, and then I was about to say, why don't you come visit, you know? I said, Margaret, do you want me to ask her to come visit sometime? And she said, no. And then she told me after I left the house, she said, that woman's a squatter. I may not ever get her to leave once she sees that our house is nicer.
Yeah.
So I got a kick out of that.
We asked the spirits that, you know, when they were traveling, they're like, well, how do you travel? And they're like, all you got to do is think about where you're going to go, and you're there. And I was like,
isn't that cool?
I was like, oh, I want that ability, damn it. I'll travel the world as a spirit.
I know. People are always talking about, oh, here's my bucket list. Here's what I want to do before I die. Are you kidding me? I have a bucket list after I die. That, it doesn't cost any money. I can get there immediately. I won't get sick having to drink the water, eat the food.
Right.
I'm going to spend my life here with people I love.
What are some of the locations on your bucket list that you want to investigate?
Well, in Texas, the Alamo is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Love to find that, all that gold. I did go to Dallas a few years ago, and I would like to get into the Book Depository building and talk to any spirits there who may have seen what happened at the time.
On that note, in almost the exact same location as the Book Depository building, literally just around the corner is the Dallas Holocaust Museum.
Oh, wow. I'll skip that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the first Holocaust museum ever in the United States. It was in a different location initially than what it is now. They've got an actual boxcar that was used to transport Jews. And you used to be able to walk through the boxcar in its old location, but you can't now. You can still go up to it and look inside it, definitely. I was up there. I've been to it in both locations. And the last time, I asked them about any kind of paranormal experiences anybody's had. And actually, they said nobody there has ever had any experiences. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that there's nothing there and that there's nothing going on. But I just thought I'd throw that in there. At the top of my bucket list is the Titanic. Not the museum, the Titanic, the one that's 2 miles underneath the surface of the water.
So you mean your bucket list after you die?
No, I want to investigate it while I'm alive. They got submersibles. You just get me in one of those little submarines, and I'll go down there with an EVP recorder.
You know, I'd like to do Pearl Harbor. I'd like to dive that. I mean, it's right there, though. They won't let anybody in, but at least stand there on the surface and send some spirits down to bring some up if there are any down there. I'd really like to go to Pearl Harbor. Some of these places that people don't think to go, you know, every time I go somewhere, somebody shows up after me and puts it on the internet, and you know, I feel bad even talking about it sometimes because there's a lot of people who harass ghosts and try to get them to do things. And if I say a place is haunted, then a lot of people tend to go there. But there are places that where I would like to go back. There was a parking lot. I don't know if you – have you ever – well, you've probably seen Gone with the Wind, right? Ooh.
Yeah.
God, we're having a bad storm. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard it.
Ooh. Gone with the Wind, there is this scene where all these men are laying bodies are strewn everywhere at the crossroads of the terminus, old Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And it is a scene which is now in downtown Atlanta. It's this huge parking lot that stretches, if anybody's listening from Atlanta, it's behind the Atlanta Journal Constitution and the old Wachovia building all the way down through underground Atlanta. It's very,
right.
Very large. And the parking lot's for all of these skyscrapers back here. That's where everybody, I mean, it was the exact location. I mean, that isn't that location in the film. It was filmed in Hollywood, but that is the location where all the bodies were at the burning of, you know, after the battle and during the burning of Atlanta. I'd really like to go to that place just to try to help.
Right.
I'd like to help at 9/11, but I don't know if I could stand it yet.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, the one place, well, me and Jeff were going to go when we belonged to another team before I started this one, is the Titanic Museum in Branson, Missouri. It's got the very first artifacts that were pulled off the ship, and they actually, when we were getting ready to go the week prior to, they have a journal that everybody writes in their paranormal experiences, and that sucker is thick. Paranormal, you know, everything that's happened. And some of the activity is just crazy. You know, they built, when you drive into Branson, it's actually the front half of the Titanic actually replicated. It's just sitting there on land, you know, but the front half of it. And they reconstructed it and, you know, the museum. So up on the ship deck by the captain's, whatever you call it, where the steering wheel is and whatnot, They on the plexiglass, the cleaning people go in there and clean everything at night. And then the next day, they come in and there'd be little children's handprints on the outside of that glass.
Oh,
and there
wow.
There would be footsteps that, like, somebody had jumped in water and then started walking on a wooden deck and left a little path, foot trail of water. They did that every night. They have to clean up every morning. So,
wow.
Yeah, and that place is really haunted because of the, you know, just because of the artifacts and the attachments, you know, to these people and such a tragic event. So I still want to go to that place.
Wow. That's really interesting. I wish they could put up cameras at night, see what they could catch.
I believe they do. They have a security system, and because they told us about some experiences they caught on camera, because I remember us having a conversation with them about having somebody watch the monitors while we're there.
Oh, okay.
So, but, yeah. A friend of mine, she's starting a website that they're going to put cameras up in different haunted locations across the United States. And you'll be able to go to this one website and click on that location and watch the cameras from that location.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, yeah, you know, on my bucket list, Jeff, when we're on the spirit world side, we're going to go to Rome, and I'm going to watch a gladiator kick your ass.
Bring it on.
Well, I've heard stories. I have a friend who used to live there in the army, and she said that outside her window she would see soldiers, Roman soldiers in full gear, walking up and down the street at night. I mean, like, marching up and down the street together, and she only saw them from the knees up, because at the time the street was a lot lower than it is now. So they're like marching in, you know, marching in into the land now because they've built up the street.
Well, see, that's no problem for me. I just kick them in the head.
Don't think they're going to feel that, which is a good thing.
When I'm on the spirit side, they will.
Oh. Well, hey, don't you want to ask them some questions?
Yeah, if they're going to threaten me, I'm going to whoop ass.
I don't think they're... I have to wonder if that's, you know, just happening over and over, you know.
Well, if they come at me
residual hauntings,
I'm going to bust off with a spiritual AK-47.
We actually listened to two spirits get in an argument through our spirit box.
Oh,
yep.
Cool.
It was so funny because they were arguing. We had two different male voices, and they weren't really talking to us. You know, we were trying to establish some sort of communication with anybody, and these two voices come in and had a conversation back and forth, and one called the other one an asshole, and then the other guy said, take it outside, and then the spirit box went quiet. But they actually stepped off to whoop each other's ass.
Oh, that is
and
so
we were,
funny.
We were just laughing our butts off because they're like, did we just experience this? This is funny.
I wouldn't mind having one of those hanging around me to help. To help sometimes, so I don't have to do it myself.
Yeah, you know, in their experience has been, you know, because when you have these, you're kind of open, right? You're kind of like a beacon, you know, in the spirit world. Have you had people try to follow you home?
Oh, not yeah, all the time. I have one now I can't get rid of. I don't really mind. He followed me from my family cemetery. George Washington and I had the same. His grandmother and my great-great, like ninth great-grandmother, were the one and the same. And so I went to go there. The cemetery at George Washington's birthplace is right there, and my relatives are buried there. So I went to go visit, and this man followed me, and I didn't really realize it at the time. I, you know, had my kids with me and my husband, and it was a really cold day, so I couldn't tell temperature-wise. And anyway, he followed me home, and I noticed when I started trying to get EVP for my daughter's science fair exhibit, he was just kind of getting in there and doing things. And then, you know, he plays the flute. And he will play the flute, like, when I'm trying to go to sleep at night. Or he'll go, doodle-loo, you know, when I'm trying to think. And he just, he says I look exactly like his sister. Because he wears a kilt. He's from the 1700s, and he came over from Scotland. And he says he doesn't know how we're related, but somehow we're related. He's a mixed something. And I come from McCorkles and all kinds of, you know, Irish and Scottish people. And anyway, he comes around and just sort of picks on me like a brother would pick on a sister. So I haven't really kicked him to the curb too much. I do make him be quiet a lot of the time. But there was one at the Mary Washington house who was a very interesting man. He knew Mary Washington. He told me stories of how they would walk together to the apothecary and what she would get for her herbs she would get for her arthritis, and he would tell about how George Washington would come visit her, and she always made like ginger cookies and lemonade, and they'd sit on the back porch, and what George Washington would say, and how he kind of doted on her, but he never had the time to be with her very much, and some very interesting things, and he was able to tell us some things that we were able to validate. He said that he went to church, but only every 3 weeks because his church was like three different denominations, and he told us which denominations. And he told us where it was, and so we were able to validate that in that time period in the 1700s, there was a church, there was a building that they alternated weeks to go to church, the different denominations. Well, anyway, he followed me home. I didn't realize this, but he told Mark Nesbitt on EVP, I was there with Mark, and he said, "I love you," to me on EVP. And we were looking at each other like, oh, no. This guy, I guess, I don't know. There's just some people who fall in love rather quickly. And so he came home with me. And I noticed one day, because I was working on my book, I was writing my book, and I was sitting there, and there's always a woman who stands in the front door from the plantation, and that's okay. She was a grandmotherly type. And this man was there, and I just knew that he was there, and I next to her, and I said, "Look, I know you're here, and I know you always stand back far enough so that I can't feel you. I just didn't want to have to engage in a conversation with the guy."
Right.
But it was just too obvious. And I was talking on the – I had just been talking on the phone to Mark's wife, telling her that I knew and trying to be vague about it so he wouldn't hear me. But it was obvious. So he started talking to me more and more, and he got very frustrated with me and very impatient with me because he thought that I would dress up and put on makeup every day and talk to him, because that's what I did when I went to the Mary Washington house. I dressed up and I put on makeup and I went and talked to him. Well, my life as a writer is very different than my public life. I put on my pajamas and I write with no makeup on. And I don't like to be disturbed during the day when I do this. So I think that it was a very different experience than he had hoped for. And he got very frustrated with me one day and just called me out and took off. And I haven't seen him since. But it's not like I invited him home with me. But I have come home with soldiers and had no idea. I mean, you can't know everything all the time because it's just energy. And when I went on one of my weekends to Gettysburg, I came home and I walked in and my daughter said, "Mommy, you have 4 soldiers with you. How did you not know?" And I said, "Because I've had 4 hours sleep for 2 nights. And I'm pretty much dulled. I can't feel much. So I have to really get rid of a spirit. I have to have energy, enough energy, that I'm not worn down." But, yeah, there are so many examples of people who followed me home or followed me places, and I'll just tell them no, not to. But people have – you can't say it always works because it doesn't always work, you know. I have to get nasty sometimes. Sometimes I have to get angels carry them away, you know. There's all kinds of things that, you know, come and follow you when you could feel them. I guess just like on Earth, yeah. Everybody wants to have meaning. They want to be understood. And in death, it's the same way. You know, they find somebody who can understand them. So they
I have a spirit that followed us or followed me. Because my house is where we gather and leave to go to any place, you know, and I keep all the equipment here. So this is like the essential station, you know. And the home in Arkansas, the Allen House, one of the spirits that is there called me back here. And, you know, different people that would come over that are sensitive would say, "Dude, you got a boy standing in your hallway." And I'm like, "What the hell? I got a kid here." Well, he died when he was in his 40s. But, like, the best time in his life, I guess, was when he was a child. So he appears as a child, but he talks like an adult when he talks to you. It's weird.
Huh.
But he's a practical joker, and he loves playing jokes. And, of course, my team, you know, you can tell me and Jeff, we hound each other all the time, and that's the way we are. You know,
well, I don't.
Time and meeting, yeah. And I guess he just liked our energy because I've had different psychics on the actual show and on the show, and I'll some of them I'll test. I'll say, well, tell me what's in my house, and they'll describe him to a T and whatnot. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he's still here. And I said, well, tell him that if he's going to stay here, he needs to pay rent or do the dishes or the laundry or something. he played a joke on me the other day. I couldn't find my electric razor. I tore this house apart. Went and bought a brand new electric razor, which they're not cheap. And I walked right by a place in my house that it wasn't there before, and I found it laying there.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
But have you ever awakened in the morning and found your laundry done?
No, I wish. I'd be happy. You know, I live alone. I got two animals, but, you know, yeah, I got a spirit hanging out here. He could chip in around the house with help. Instead, he hides stuff that I need and then watches me go buy something, buy a replacement, and then lo and behold, there it is. I didn't even have to buy it.
Oh, funny. I lost my RRDR60, and I can't find it. So I'm hoping somebody's playing a trick on me, and it will just appear. It has a lot of good stuff on it. I'm not happy about that. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm going to have a lot of fun when I'm a spirit. What did you say?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you.
So he gives you a hard time, Jeff.
Yeah, he gives me a hard time, but yeah, I never reciprocate. I'm always the one that's being picked on.
You're gonna hear thunder crack in the background over in just neck of the woods in a minute when the lightning strikes.
No, you're not. I'm always getting picked on. Kevin never gives me the things that he owes me, like the tour bus, all that. Just
you're not.
I'm picking up on a male spirit around you now.
Around me?
Yeah. Around Kevin. Yeah.
Oh Lord.
His name starts with a U, but I don't know. I can't get it. It's like I'm hearing like urban, but I'm not. It's like a joke. I don't know what that means.
Right.
Do you know?
I have no idea.
And maybe that guy, and he's trying to say something. I don't know, but.
I got him, and then from what I have figured out for different people that's read, that I have a older male spirit here that's kind of sometimes he appears in a military uniform, and some say that he's my great uncle, Uncle Dan, and so.
Well, I'm not picking up on them right now, but there's a woman around Jeff.
Oh.
Pardon me?
Can you describe her for me?
She's blonde, but it's kind of a brownish, like blonde, and her hair is up. And she has this dress on that is, I could draw it, but I can't really tell you what era it is because I'm not like a clothing historian. But it's not a really high neck, but it's like a high neck would be considered today, but not the kind that goes up your neck, you know. And it's got this little flounce around the top, and the sleeves are kind of full, and it's long. And it's this sort of sage green color. And her face is, it's pretty. It's not like an Angelina Jolie beautiful, but it's kind of like a round CoverGirl kind of pretty, very clean, scrubbed. And she's smiling. She's happy. She likes you. I think she had two children. Does anybody told you this before? Do you see this around you?
I've been to a couple of things. Is she giving you a name?
Oh, hold on. Let me see. Um, it also it almost sounds like Janice, but I've got a Jeanette here that's been talking to me, and I almost want to say Anne or Annette, like Elizabeth Annette.
Does she say the connection to me at all?
She gave you a hug around the neck, and she kind of messed up your hair and sort of a...
Now, I felt the hug.
Okay. I don't know if it's more sisterly or grandmotherly. It's obviously more of a grandmotherly, but playful.
Mm-hmm.
She loves you.
I did recently lose a grandmother back in April. But I've also been told several times before that there was a spirit around me who really had no actual connection to me, just came across me and just liked me and just been hanging around.
That's what I'm getting from this one. I think she just likes you. And she's very neurotypical and that she knows she's died. She knows you're not going to be her boyfriend. She knows all of these things. She just likes you, you know,
right.
And it's sort of like, it's not like I'm in love with you. It's just that she likes you in all these different ways, you know.
Well, I'm a likable guy.
Wow, finally a woman that likes you, Jeff.
No, that's not finally. It's usual.
She's not so thrilled with the outlaw, though.
Hey, thank you. I keep trying to tell him. He won't listen to me.
Do you smoke a lot, Kevin?
Yeah.
I keep trying to tell him, quit that, because it's dumb.
I know.
She can't stand smoking, and that's the thing. She says you smoke all the time.
Yeah, I'm smoking the nail.
She said that's really the only problem with you.
I have lost countless investigation hours waiting on him to finish up a cigarette.
Hey, I wasn't the only one on the team, my friend.
I don't care, but you should have said, all right, nobody smoke, so Jeff can investigate.
We got to take a break, my friend. You couldn't smoke a 7 to 8 hours without a break. Come on.
Do what?
You can investigate hours. You're always complaining that we need to stop when we're on road trips. You got to pee.
Well, there's a difference between physically having to pee and wanting to smoke a cigarette.
Well, I'd go pee and then smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, and then by the time you're done, I'm waiting in the car for 15 minutes.
Oh, man.
She's
going to love our relationship, man.
She's just shaking her head.
Yeah, that's normally the reaction people give Jeff and I when we start bantering each other. They just shake their head.
She said, y'all should have been married.
Damn.
Outlaw wants to, but I'm saying no.
Oh.
No.
She's funny.
Yeah.
What? I am getting a strong Annette, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's what I was saying. I said, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
No, I am getting it strong. Now she's stronger, and I'm getting Annette.
I don't know who in the world that could be.
Well, I don't think you knew her before. I don't think it's... I think she's from...
You probably
she's from where you're...
Somewhere.
She's from where?
I think she's from Louisiana.
Louisiana.
But she's been with you for years.
Hmm. Really? Huh.
Did you ever go... I feel like she'd been married to a guy who was like a shrimper or something.
Hmm.
I don't know if there were... You went anywhere in Louisiana...
I've been in Louisiana, of course. I've been to New Orleans, but that was in 2008.
She's been with you for a while. I think she goes places with you too. She went to Louisiana with you. But she saw you in Louisiana. Yes, she saw you in Louisiana. So I think you may have picked her up in Louisiana.
I went to Louisiana several times growing up. Couldn't tell you all.
I don't think
the
it's been that long. It's been since you were an adult.
Right. I've been through through Louisiana several times as an adult. So
did you ever stop where there was a? Did you ever go to a restaurant with a deck that overlooked the water, or a dock, or something? Your boats.
The only time I can remember anything like that was in 08 when Outlaw. This is going to sound crazy, but I mean it's true. Outlaw and I had lunch at Hooters on the boardwalk, which was overlooking the river.
Okay, because I'm seeing water, and I'm seeing, like a patio of a restaurant, but it's wooden, and then,
mm-hmm.
like, a boardwalk kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been with you a while, so that could be that's 6 years ago. I mean, that makes sense, because you were an adult. She saw you as an adult.
Right.
And you were just, she said you were laughing and drinking.
Yep, that's how we were.
And, did you make fun of your waitress?
Oh, that I couldn't tell you. I mean, that's, if me and Outlaw are at Hooters, that's a high possibility. We had actually just come from a casting call.
Yeah.
And he had actually gotten a gig as an extra in the film W.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my 10% because I'm the one that told him about it.
Yeah, but you didn't weasel your way into a scene like I did, and you actually
no,
got to
and I expect
meet Oliver Stone and Josh Brolin and Elizabeth Banks.
Oh, great! How cool! Has the movie already been made?
Yeah. It was. Several years ago, it's on DVD
well,
now.
Well, 2008, I would think it has, but I didn't remember it off the top of my head.
It's called W.
Yeah, it's
George W.
W.
Bush.
Yeah, Oliver
it's
Stone
what?
Was the director.
W.
Yeah, that's great. W.
Hmm?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I have a question for you. This year, I have lost several. And I'm wanting to know if any of them are around me.
You kind of go in and out. You've lost several relatives. Is that what you said?
Well, several people, some relatives, some close friends. And I'm wanting to know if they're around me.
Well, generally, I'm sure they're around you and just check in on you.
Mm-hmm.
I see a guy with sort of brownish hair that's kind of. I said chubby, he says stocky.
Okay.
You have a heart attack?
Yep.
Okay. He seems like a fun-loving guy.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to leave when he did, but he's okay.
Now that's something he would have said too. That's pretty cool.
He said he'll give you EVP too if you want it.
And he knows that I do that stuff. I may have to break out.
Yeah, I don't know if he did in life, but he does now.
No, he did. He did in life.
What does it mean? All's cool with the girl.
The only thing I can possibly think of is that I had a friend who passed away in mid-April. He was really young, and he left behind a young wife.
Oh.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Okay. When you can verify that. You can ask him on EVP, too. He's nodding, yeah.
Okay. What does he look like?
He actually looks kind of young now. I mean, he looks like he's...
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what he looked like then, but I know... I mean, I know what he looked like then, but I don't know if he's looking younger. But he would look like somebody who might be 35, 30, 35. He has sort of a straight hair, but it's normal or longer than normal, but it's not like a buzz cut or something, and it's not long.
Okay.
Does that clarify more? He's wearing a T-shirt.
It's possible he could be getting two.
Okay.
One, the guy that died of a heart attack, he was in his early 60s when he passed. Or late 50s, one of the two. He did have longer hair when he was in his 30s. And another one that died just literally about 2 weeks later died real young. But he didn't have long hair or straight hair at all.
Well, this guy, I almost think that he's having... You know, when we die, we can really look any age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that he likes this projection of himself.
Okay.
If that
makes sense. That makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, he's nodding yeah.
That makes a lot of sense because he definitely marched to the beat of his own drummer.
He said, and you're one to talk.
Yeah, he said that. But my question for him, and it's a simple question, one word, why?
Just nodding no.
Okay.
I think that... Hold on a minute. At one point in time, this is what he says, at one point in time, you can't see all that's there to be seen.
Mm-hmm. That's something he would have said.
Okay.
Is this, Jeff, is this somebody that I know?
No. Well, yes, you met him when I lived in Nacogdoches.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He worked with my dinner theater company.
Right. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And he passed away you know, funny enough, on tax day.
Wow.
No. Well, that's the way to go. I mean,
right?
I hope it happens before I have to pay taxes.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
He thanks you for your kindness and for being a good buddy.
Cool. Is there a young
for
one?
For your friendship.
Is there a little one around me? Or maybe a little one that's trying to talk to me?
I'm not getting... Like a 3-year-old or something?
No, like a 12-year-old.
Oh, I'm not getting that.
Okay.
Not that there's not, you know, but I'm just...
You
I'm
not
in that
through.
Really that state of mind, you know. They may not be coming
yeah.
through, they may not be there, or it just may not be me. I mean, when I do readings and bring people from the other side, rather, the ghosts are easy. They just talk, and I hear them like they're, you know, they're like people, the thoughts. But when I bring people from the other side, it takes a lot more concentration, and it uses different psychic abilities, not just clairaudience. So it takes a lot of my energy, and I have to meditate before I do it.
Sure.
In order to alter my state of consciousness. And I'm not really in that place. So I can pick up some, but not, you know,
right.
not as much. And if, mm-hmm. and if I were to walk around open like that, which I've done, and I'm, like, freezing my car keys and driving to the wrong school for my kids. And I don't do readings. And in the fall, a bunch of people just were really wanting readings. So I did, you know, I did them for about 3 days, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I walked through my living room, and it was like a frat party of ghosts in there. And
wow.
I could see them, and I could hear them, and I don't usually see them and hear them. You know, I mean, I'll tune into them and hear them. But this was, it was just too much. I was too open, and I don't, you know, I can't live like that. It's too exhausting. So I stopped.
Yeah.
Stopped doing that. Oh. Well, it's been fun to be on your show tonight.
Well, thank you. And, of course, I'm going to finish reading this book of yours.
Thank you. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, Investigative Medium, The Awakening. And you have a second book, correct?
I do. Well, I have a couple more coming out within the next year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I have out is How to Cleanse Spirit Energy. And it's really more of a guide than a book. It's not very long. It helps people who have who want to cleanse their house of energy, and also want to, if there's negative stuff there, it'll help with that. I think it's a real good go-to book. It was number one on Amazon for months, and I give it away for free because I just think that everybody who needs it, you know, should be able to get it.
Right.
So I think it's available at all online stores, but Amazon, I know it's free on Amazon and probably Barnes & Noble and hopefully everywhere. Because online retailers make you charge. Pardon
me? What's the name of your first book again?
Well, my guide is How to Cleanse Spirit Energy, and my book is Investigative Medium, The Awakening.
Okay.
And that's available at all online retailers, and you can buy it through Amazon. Some bookstores, not all.
And it's available on Kindle and paperback?
And, yes, paperback, order through Amazon, and it's available on the Kindle, on the Nook, like 100 other places.
And this is relatively new. This literally just came out last, like in December or early January.
It came out in July last year. It is very new. Well, it's a year old, but.
And I'm about to give you some real props here. Just looking at a
okay.
review, Kevin James Shea, Post Newsweek, and author of Walking Through the Law, he says, Lane may be ordinary in some ways, but she tells an extraordinary story.
Yes. you know, I have to say, I'm not just saying it's because it's me, because it's not all me. It's a great story.
Right.
And thank God for Jeanette and Bill and William, who channeled a lot of that from the other side. And I've written it in their words. You know, it was funny. I had one review. I have a lot of reviews on Amazon. And one woman wrote and said, this is an outstanding book. Except she misspells words. And she said I had to wonder about her her editor. I have this great editor from, you know, Simon & Schuster, and she has her own place, own publishing firm down in Texas. I go down to Texas to see her, and I had lawyers look at it. I had everybody look at it. But the thing with the words is I had slaves. The slaves told me their stories in you know, and I had to write it phonetically. Because
right.
I wanted it to sound like they really said. And I thought it was pretty obvious. It seems pretty obvious to everybody who's read it.
Yeah.
The one woman.
I normally ignore reviews, except for custom reviews, because those are the ones that count to me. And just look at
yeah.
the custom reviews on Amazon. They're all just glowing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really have wanted it to help people.
Look
so,
good.
I'm glad it was on the New York Times bestseller list this, well, I guess, November, and mm-hmm. then it stayed on Amazon. So that made me feel really good, and that not good for me, but good that people were reading it. And I've gotten a lot of response about it, and I think because it's not just the story about the love story and about the mystery and the paranormal things that happened in my house, but it's a story about how I dealt with all of it. And part of that story is going through with the story of my mother and her death and what all I went through there and how she came to me and I overcame all of these things because of her love coming from the other side and showing me. So I think in that way it helps people to realize with a story what I think a lot of psychics have in their books. Just, you know, they tell you this is what it's like, or this is what, you know, what will happen when you die on the other side. But this is an absolute, everything is absolutely true, and it's sort of an example of what I've been shown on the other side, that how that changed my life.
Right.
So hoping it will help others with their grief too.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far, so good review here as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're very kind. I appreciate that so much.
Because this is the first book Outlaw has read since he was in fourth grade.
No. No.
Okay, fifth grade.
I got a stack of different paranormal books here that I'm like, every day I read a little bit from each one. And
Zach Bagans' books do not count.
Do what?
Zach Bagans' books don't count.
No. I did read that book, but I got other books, damn it. Jeff, did you ever read 90 Minutes in Heaven?
I don't have that book.
Yeah, that's a good book.
It will take you a lot longer than 90 minutes to read it, but
exactly.
I know of it.
Yeah.
I just don't have it.
That's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my father's so funny.
Much. Yeah. Well, thank
Go
you
ahead.
So much for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed talking with you both very much. And let me know what you think of the book, and thanks to the audience who's listened, and and to Annette.
And if anybody wants to, do you have any websites or anything you want to throw out there that people can go to if they want to learn more about you or whatnot?
Yes, there's lanecrosby.com, which is LaineCrosby.com. And there's actually everything there. I'm reworking the site to make it a little more user-friendly because I have so much on there, but that's a good place. And I'm also on, my book is on Amazon. And so check it out when you have a chance. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have to try to get you on later in the year and see how things have been going.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'd love it.
I wanted to personally thank you because by nature, I'm very skeptic of people that can claim to see spirits because most of them, at least for me, have been too vague, but you hit some things right on the head.
Thank you. I do hope that helped bring you some comfort in the death of your loved ones, too.
Absolutely it did.
Thank you.
I knew they were around me before, but kind of confirmation.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.
Well, you take care.
All
you
right.
Too.
You have a good
I'll
night.
I look forward to talking to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.
Very cool.
Great guest.
Absolutely. I sent her a friend request on Facebook, so hopefully she'll accept it.
Yeah. And like I said, her book actually is really good. I've read about half of it so far.
The reviews, the customer reviews are outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
None of them, at least the ones I've read, the lowest one is wow. So that's, I'm probably going to order it either tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a New York Times bestseller and Amazon number one bestseller. And like I said, it's got some reviews on the back of the deal there. But great book. I'm going to finish reading it. You know, it's something you need to get if you like reading, and you can relate to some of the stuff that's talked about in there too as well.
Cool.
Next Sunday, who do I have here?
You won't have me next Sunday.
Damn, are you absent again because of wrestling?
Wrestling's on. I got a pay-per-view. I think. Hold on. No, I won't be watching a pay-per-view. I'll be working on a show next Sunday. That's what it is.
Well, make sure Matt could be present so I'm not by myself. Because we do have a guest. We have, the young lady that Kristen A. Thorne. Kirsten. Wasn't that the woman that was supposed to be on the night I was in the hospital? She came on a little bit later. That was kind of drug induced. Yeah. Well, we got her. So that's our guest next week. Tuesday, I have a guest, but I don't have it in front of me right off the bat. So tune in to Terrify Radio. All the other shows of the network, I'm not going to go through it because we're in the archive. And everybody have a good night. And Jeff's going to play us out.
This is Time Bomb, my Methods of Mayhem.
Over again it plays. I'm not scared to face the wreckage of my younger ways. Every little thing you do is measured by the damage that it does to you. Friends.